This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Rose Oconee Historical Society. Last week I was reading about the logging business from G. Arnold Grefthen's book, The Land of Howling Wolves, a copy of which I found in the Rosa Museum research area. He told about all the different jobs at the numerous camps in the early years of our county. I'll continue reading from his book today. Schoolboys were interested listeners in the spring of the year as the lumberjacks returned to their little farms and homesteads. There would be many interesting tales told in the evenings at the little hotel lobby in Winoska, a favorite gathering place for men and boys. The lumberjacks during the past winter would create in the minds of the younger lads a desire to be a lumberjack. Yours truly was one such youngster and did acquire quite a lot of experience eventually in timber work in the large railroad logging camps of Minnesota and Wisconsin. In the fall of the year, 1920, another boy and I took a job of cutting tamarack cordwood for a Rosa man who had purchased quite a large tract of dry on-the-stump tamarack located about 10 miles to the north and east of Rosa. This timber was located very close to the Canadian boundary line. We were to get $1.50 per cord and to furnish our own bedding, food, and to do our own cooking. A small camp with heating stove and an old cook stove was provided. In those days, there was a big demand for firewood in the local towns and villages. Also, much wood was shipped by rail to the larger cities. We stayed at this cordwood camp until Christmas time. During the nights, the wolves would be entertaining us with their wolf music, and also the many Canadian National trains running over the nearby railroad tracks would set up a vibration in our camp shack, which at times would nearly throw us out of our wooden bunks. It really was quite interesting, but not too much money to be made. At Christmas time, we called it quits on this particular job and went home to Winoska to be with our folks during the holidays. As I mentioned, there wasn't too much to make, cutting the cordwood at $1.50, but the worst part was we had a hard time collecting what we did have coming. When it was time to be paid, our employer would not show up. After the holidays, we got the urge to try some of the large wood camps operating out of International Falls, Virginia, and Duluth. As Duluth was the farthest away, we decided to go there first. And if it didn't work out, we could try Virginia and International Falls on the way back towards home again. One cold morning about the middle of January in 1921, we got off the Canadian National train at Duluth. What a busy city this was. We decided first of all to get a room at some reasonable priced hotel for a couple of days to get acquainted, then to find where the employment offices are located and what they had to offer in the line of work. After having secured our room, we set out to look the town over. We liked what we saw of the hilly city, especially what we saw on Michigan Street, commonly called the Bowery. Here was located several employment offices. In the windows and on the walls of these employment offices, signs were displayed offering jobs. A great many of them were jobs offering work in logging camps, in such lines of woods work as cooks, cookies, kitchen helpers, checkers, sawyers, blacksmiths, carpenters, saw filers, office clerks, pulp and log cutters, railroad tie makers, and teamsters. Tie makers were usually skilled in the use of the broad axe and were about the best paid of all workers. The harder they worked and the more ties they hewed out in a day, the more money they earned. Even in those days, an expert tie maker earned from $10 to $15 per day at the going piecework rates. It took a lot of experience and hard work to be able to hew the ties so they passed inspection and to make enough of them to beat those working for monthly wages. Monthly wages ran from a low of $35 per month for cookies and swampers to about $60 per month for a skilled four-horse teamster. All monthly workers got free board. All piece cutters had to pay an average of $1 per day for food, plus a fee for tools every month. After talking to several of the agents operating employment offices, we were offered such jobs as swampers, kitchen helpers, and a couple of pulp cutting jobs. We turned these jobs down as the wages were not high enough to satisfy us. After all, we would be 18 years old by the time spring arrived and felt that we should get in some practical experience at some of the higher paying timber jobs. We were especially keen at trying our hands at the art of hewing ties. Tie makers made big money and was his own boss. He could work as slow or as fast as he felt like. The harder he worked and the more ties he produced, the larger his earnings would be. The first evening we spent in Duluth was an interesting one. There were four theaters in Duluth at that time that would open their doors about 10 a.m. and have a continuous show until they closed at about midnight. These four theaters were of the silent type with a piano player furnishing continuous music in setting with the particular type of silent movie being shown. The movies shown would generally be of the cowboy type with a few rustlers thrown in, or the villain having a beautiful young girl in his filthy clutches. The beautiful young girl eventually was always rescued by her sweetheart. The admission price to these four theaters was 5 cents. Others up to and over a dollar, and they always had a full house. I'll continue reading from Mr. Grefflin's story of trying to find work in Duluth next week. Thanks to Wild 102 for this time to tell our county stories.